So we're gonna do a podcast. Are
you ready? We podcasting now?
I think that we're podcasting right
now. Okay, we're podcasting.
We are officially on the internet and...
We're podcasting.
Yes. This is Franklin
Don't
Sterling.
Use all your podcast because we need some for later.
All of our podcasts.
In case we run out of podcast. I need some for later. You know, when...
We can record
And the wee hours of the night when there's no podcast left, I'd save a little.
You gotta bust your podcast now.
No, I'm gonna need some podcasts. Okay. So don't use it all up.
This is Franklin Sterling III, and I'm here with Karen.
Karen T. Soliday. Karen Soliday.
Karen S. Soliday.
Soliday, right.
And we are the creators of The Red Bedspread.
Yes.
The Red Bedspread is our first
book.
Our first published, independently published,
yes,
children's book.
Or adult book. It can actually,
anybody.
You know what? It's anybody.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the reason why we're doing it ourselves.
Right.
Well, number one is the publishing industry is changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
Most people do now concur that publishing it yourself is a good way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get more... Of you have control over
much more freedom. Yeah.
Yes, and you make more if you're looking to make money, which we're really not. But
there's no middleman.
No,
nothing like that.
No, because if you have a literary agent and a publisher now, you have to be at the top in the rarefied air of a J.K. Rowling, let's say, to have them do any work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to do all the work
right. That
we're going to do anyway, which I like. I welcome the work yourself. And they're going to take all your money. They're going to take everything. And so you might as well just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Plus this book, it doesn't fit into the, what I think is a very narrow, category
for literature, for children's
picture book, children's picture book in the publishing world, if you're going that route. They want it to be, it can only be for like ages one
right.
to like four or five, maybe. Five's getting a little old, 1 to 4. This book is for anybody because
right.
who buys the books? Adults. Kids, you don't see a one-year-old going into Barnes & Noble and going, excuse me, do you have that book, The Red Bedspread? No. It's the parents.
Yeah.
You know, so it's for anybody. It's a book for anybody.
Exactly.
Really.
And that's part of why we need it.
And two, because when I was a kid...
I wanted to make this book because I wanted to expose the public to my illustration capabilities, to my artistic background. And I wanted everybody, not just children, to enjoy it, but for adults to enjoy it also.
And that's who... I buy children's books now.
Mm-hmm.
I love children's books because what's an adult but a child? That's it.
Exactly.
Children's
yeah.
books allow adults to go back to the days when, I mean, I remember poring over the Childcraft books, and what drew me into the text was the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love it. My life when I was a kid, and all of my brothers and sisters, which, by the way, I have 8 brothers and 6 sisters,
mm-hmm.
and we looked Childcraft books. And so what I did much, like 20 years ago, is I went and bought another copy. I have 2 sets of Childcrafts now, different from the 20s and the 30s, and then the same set that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding you, my brothers and sisters, when I... You know, taken pictures of the books and sent them to them as emails or texts or whatever. They swoon because it takes you right back
right.
to your childhood, and it's nothing but happy Pharrell Williams
happy.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's it. And your illustrations, I mean. The people that I've shown our little prototype copy that we have, which we have, by the way, before we're ready to pull the throttle and let Amazon.com, you know, you can go buy the book. I've got nothing but completely positive, loving the illustrations because that's what kids learn about what they like and what they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Is by looking at books and looking at the pictures and making up scenarios in their mind as to what's going on in the picture, you know. And that's how it helps kids create a creative fantasy life, which is all good.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the story in rhyme meter, of which in the publishing world everyone says, "Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, that's,
don't
well,
write it in rhyme."
Let's talk about that. Let's focus on that for a little
okay.
while. We wrote it in a, it's almost like a song. You can
yes.
kind of sing the whole story.
You could. Because why? When I was growing up and I was getting into actually first learning to read, kids and people are drawn to meter, bup, 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 and rhymed meter. It helps kids remember things, it helps them memorize things, and it's more pleasant that
right.
way. And I specifically, I like to write some things that I write in rhymed couplets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got Molière plays by Richard Wilbur, you know, rhymed couplets. It's Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
sonnets, the end lines, so all of that. And in the world of publishing, when I presented some of the text, you know, in the whole process of writing it and getting critiqued by it, you know, everyone said that was legit publishers or literary agents were all like, "Well, you shouldn't do rhyming."
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, well, no.
Did they ever say,
to do rhyming.
Did they ever say why? Did they say it's like it's overplayed or it's been done before, or is it just like,
you know what?
Cheap,
I've never
like,
heard anybody really give me a
throwback or something like that.
Never gotten a legitimate reason as to why. And look at
Dr. Seuss. He
Dr.
all
Seuss.
Of his books are in rhymed couplets.
Exactly. And I mean, am I trying to copy? No. Me personally, I like the challenge
yeah.
of presenting thoughts or pictures in my mind in rhymed couplets.
And it also helps that you kind of have some of a background of theater. You know
yeah.
about writing
music, writing
songs.
Yeah.
So that kind of comes naturally.
And just from growing up and memorizing poems or songs,
mm-hmm.
we liked it. It makes it easier. It makes it easier to do that. So this first book, I wanted to do it in that. And the idea for the book came a long time ago. I mean, it came when I was laying on a red bedspread
mm-hmm.
that traveled through the different various beds and bedrooms of my house when I was growing up. We had a red bedspread, and it was used on several beds. And I remember laying on this red bedspread maybe when I was 12, 11, 5th grade, 6th grade.
Do you remember where you got
it
the
was,
red bedspread?
Well,
didn't you say it was from the Vermont country
well,
store?
No, I think they got the red bedspread from Sears. But subsequently, I get this catalog called the Vermont General Store, and I love it because they have all this nostalgic stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, makeup, candy, all the candy.
Is it like
you,
SkyMall or what kind of?
No, it's a catalog that.
Like Eddie Bauer or.
No, not like yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a catalog, but it's a. I guess it's a store in Vermont,
uh-huh.
and I'm not sure of the town, but it's so chock full of nostalgic items, from lipsticks to perfumes and things to shampoo. You know, that was big, and people can suggest.
So like homemade soap.
Soaps. And oh, you know what they have? Like, you know, remember that date bread in a can?
Yeah.
You know, I remember that bread in a can and like fruit cakes and like Walnettos and like Snorkel candies
mm-hmm.
and like all these candies and things that you had when you were growing up. The Senate bean soup you can get. I mean, everything. Lance, these things called Lance of Austria flannel nightgowns. those kinds of Dr. Denton's, you know, the red long underwear with the buttons in the back for guys.
Yeah.
I mean, just stuff like that. Slips, Carter's spanky pants. I mean,
country store stuff.
Well, just
back in New Hampshire.
Back in New Hampshire, you can't get the L from here. But no, it's stuff that you grew up with. You know, I mean, at Christmas they had, you know, the little, remember those wax candles that looked like choir boys, and they'd have a candle, mm-hmm. They'd be reading the book, you know, and they had the vestments on. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of candles. Candles that were wax Christmas trees, green, that you used. Ornaments, stuff that you can't get anymore readily. Mm-hmm. This company puts this catalog, and they actually have a store. It's a big store. They sell all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that bedspread I saw in their catalog, one of their catalogs. And it wasn't exactly the color of red that we had, but it was exactly the same bedspread. And it was kind of a heavy cotton twill, maybe, and it had like ridges in it. It wasn't corduroy. Mm-hmm. And I remember laying on this bedspread, taking a nap or doing something, and I was playing with cars. I'm one of those girls that like to play with cars. Funny, I sold cars. I like cars. I don't know why.
But you didn't play with like Barbies. Did you play Barbies?
I did play with Barbies, yeah, and I had paper dolls, but I like cars. I liked playing with cars, Hot Wheels and little matchbox cars, mm-hmm. and making little roads. And this bedspread had these twill things that made perfect super highways for the cars to go on. And from the best of my recollection, I remember thinking when I was laying on the bedspread one day, one afternoon.
When you were like a kid?
Yeah, 11 or 12, yeah. Thinking I should write a book about this bedspread.
So this has been in your mind
for a long time. I know, isn't that weird? Uh-huh. And
it didn't come into fruition until you met me all the way back in 2000.
I had the idea, but I never.
It was almost like, I remember when I met you and you told me about the story, it was almost like you had the idea, but you didn't know how to execute it.
No.
And that's kind of where
We were talking about creativity.
Yeah, that's kind of where I come into the picture. Is
right.
I was my major in college was in animation and media arts, so I was learning all these technical programs and artistic techniques and whatnot. So, you know, I met Karen and we started talking about this story, and through our discussions, it kind of escalated into actually
I drew the first picture.
A very rudimentary sketch of the main character,
which I still have, by the way. I have all of them.
And I showed it to Karen, and she thought it was cool, but she didn't. She wanted it to be more.
We went through
more
five,
stylized.
We did a handful of
different character designs. So once we got the character designed, I think that helped you kind of be able to think in your mind, what is this kid going to do? Where is he going to go? What's the story going to be about?
Yes.
And how is it going to all play out?
Right. Because I didn't really have a storyline until we started chatting. Mm-hmm. I knew about the bedspread, and I knew it was going to be about a kid who used the bedspread mm-hmm. As a cape mm-hmm. to turn himself into a superhero, to avenge injustice in his world as he saw it.
We didn't know how or why he would be doing these sorts of things. So I guess you could kind of say that we were almost a victim of the circumstances we were in, because at the time, you know, 2008 was right around the time that the stock market went crashing.
Bernard Madoff and
Citigroup
and the mortgages and
the bank bailouts, all that kind of stuff. So that was at the very beginning of that. We're now, you know, 5, 6, however many years into this recession.
Yes.
It's not getting any better, by the way. But anyways.
Not really, is it? No.
I think it's going to get much worse.
It's morphing into the haves versus the have-nots,
right.
Which it can't.
The main motivation.
Let them eat cake, you know.
The main motivation behind this kid, Henry T. Finch's story, is His dad loses his job.
His job, yeah.
And they don't have money to provide, you know, his dad doesn't have money to provide for his family.
So he's worried.
So little Henry gets worried, right?
So he's worried that his dad said he lost his job. So in his mind, well, it's time to put the red bedspread on and go avenge this injustice.
Right.
I'm going to go look for your job. And you said you lost
that's
it.
That's part of the, I think one of the most innovative parts of this story is Henry being, you know, a 5 or 6 year old kid, thinking that his dad's job is an actual
thing.
Physical object,
yes,
a thing. Like a dog or a missing
yes,
cat.
Yes, because
or
he sees that pink slip.
Right. And that, I think, it'll have a really good effect on people reading the book.
Because really, this is how we adults should go back to thinking like that. It's not magical thinking. It's.
Well, what do you mean?
It's what I mean is, his mom said his dad lost his job, and so he just wants to go help him find the job.
Okay.
And so what adults do...
He wants to make things good again.
Right, so let's go find it. Let's get into action and let's go fix this wrong. Let's go find the job. Rather than
And children are hypersensitive to their surroundings too, so...
Always. Children know what's going on, and you should never... Maybe one of the points of this whole thing, not maybe, it is to always tell your kids everything and listen to your kids because your kids know what to do instinctually. Maybe their method is different than what you're thinking, but maybe we should just go back to that kind of thinking because we're one and the same, really. We're one and the same. There is no difference between the 5-year-old Franklin Sterling. I mean, but you know what I mean. But you know, essentially, if we could go back to that pure, creative, wondrous attitude, we would all do better. And trust your kid. They know what's going on. Don't withhold from them. They'll help you. And essentially, that's what Henry T. Finch does. In his zealousness to go right this wrong, he actually does find his dad
right.
a job.
Right.
The job. Through just getting into action and looking in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think what's really interesting about what adults do versus, you know, they say, oh, I don't like kids. I don't want to be around. You were the kid. You were the kid. There's no separation. You did not, you know, the kid part did not stop.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to go back into your brain and in your heart and go find that wondrous, magical.
Well, what kind of circumstances are you talking about?
Any circumstances. I know that's a lead-in.
Because, I mean, we have to have some responsibilities. We have to pay taxes. We have to...
I know.
Drive,
and that, I,
you,
yeah,
know,
you know...
Pay rent. You know,
yes.
Things like that.
Yeah. And that's not fun. No. And that's the stuff that ain't fun. Because I think all of us would really much rather just go back to stomping through the leaf piles in autumn, getting close to Halloween, and stepping in the mud puddles and jumping into snowbanks, than having to go, do adult things. Who wants that? Nobody. But that's part of growing up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole. But you don't have to. I don't think you have to lose that magical innocence. You need to conjure and go in deep and pull it up. Get it out. I think it's necessary. I really do. Now, he's looking at me like mockingly, but
I'm not. No,
but
I understand what you're saying.
I mean,
obviously.
Come on. Look what Neil Gaiman says, the same thing, essentially. And I'm not trying to be like him at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. I'm just me. Am I brilliant and good? Am I the next Harper Lee? Right? No.
Who knows?
But who knows, really? You never know. Because you know what the real beauty of all of this is to see to fruition an idea that you had.
I think, yeah, I agree with that. Having completed this and being so close to releasing it, this is probably one of the most monumental occurrences in my life. Yeah.
It's massive. Because
to be able to do it all by yourself without the hand of the publisher holding you back from doing certain things a certain way, this is definitely a big step in the direction of independent artists and creatively minded individuals to be able to get their work out there.
Which is the way it's going, because look at how the music industry has changed, publishing, I mean, everything. People are getting sick of this homogenized, this is how it should go, because the suits, the lawyers, the whatever, say it's supposed to be that way. No, everybody's getting sick of that stuff. They don't want to see that stuff anymore.
Right. And people want more content.
Yes.
And they want it more immediately. They don't want to wait for publishers to, you know.
Bunch of fat asses sitting around saying, you've got to do it this way.
Watch, we're talking
because
about,
they're all frustrated.
We're talking all this bad stuff about publishers and possibly one day we might we might get a,
I know, but and I know that, and I'm not saying it's bad, but what, you know,
it's a much easier way to get your work shown to people,
to get your creative flow moving in the right direction, to get it out there. Because when you really look at it, every human being is all related and all the same. And who are publishers, who are literary agents, who are all these people, critics, etc. and so forth. They're just the same as you and me. They perhaps want to be in the same position, but are too afraid. Really, because that's what it is.
Or they're jealous because they can't do it themselves.
Could be.
Some of them, I'm sure, are critics because they're very good at what they do. They're very good at critiquing things.
Yes.
But there are, yes, people that are critics for other reasons. You know?
But what are they critiquing? They're critiquing... What is a critique? It's somebody's POV, their point of view. And their point of view comes with everything that specific person is about. Right. How did they grow up? Were their parents good to them, nurturing, or jackasses? I mean, were they bullied when they were a kid? All of those things with each individual comes into play. So essentially, anybody can be a critic, and they can. Anybody could be a literary agent. But now, look at an editor. Editing is a specific talent that someone has because they know language, syntax, the English language specifically, where a semicolon should go, if it's a run-on sentence. Yeah, that's a talent. I mean, I edited this thing, and you helped me, and I am sure that once this thing releases, we're going to get people coming out going, you know, that thing, that sentence there, that should have been a comma and then a, you know. I'm sure of it. I know it because I think it's a pretty good job
of editing. I'm not an expert at editing. I'm not. I know enough about writing.
I think it's pretty good.
How to use proper punctuation and whatnot.
I'm pretty good at it, but, you know, tenses and...
There was a level of difficulty, an added level of difficulty to doing the punctuation because it's written in rhymed couplets.
Right.
So that, you know, that affected things a little bit.
I know on the book I wrote a lot more text than what eventually ended up in the thing.
Yeah.
Because Franklin's eye came in and said, well, this should go here. So, and this we shouldn't even have because of this. And so this particular book, I probably rewrote and edited this thing myself. And with Franklin, I would ask him and he'd point out some things to me, which is great. Oh, 25, 30 times. I mean, I mean, maybe more, because over the course of, I finished actually writing the first bones of the thing at my coming home from my mother's funeral. And
that took about A year?
A year,
Year and a
year and a
half
half,
to
yeah.
do?
Because I would only write when I felt the, it was really kind of
And
just waited
that's
or
another thing. Karen has a tendency, well, talking about creativity, Karen has a tendency, she's the type of creative individual that can only be creative when she's in the right mood. You're not the type of
But isn't that what
person that can force your creativity. A good artist is able to hone in on their creativity and to channel it and to
I think
turn
I
it
can
on
do
and turn
that.
it off.
I think I can do that now.
But you only when you were writing, you know.
This first time. Now I can do it. Now after doing this, and I think it's just laziness actually on my part. Because now, like with regards to song lyrics, I've written a whole pile of them, and in fact, I'm having a song right now arranged that I wrote, and I'm still rewriting the thing. I can go in and I can write a song and write now.
Mm-hmm.
And I with regards to writing, I'm not a, well, this is what I wanted to do my whole life. No, I sort of ran from that. But now I like writing a lot. And my thing that I'm wrestling with and that I need to get into more of a discipline is writing every day and just grinding it out, because that's really the way you get better at it. Although, and maybe I've relied on that, I found that if I just plop myself in front with a pen, I can come up with the goods pretty quickly, the, you know, the bones of it, and pretty quickly. And it's not anything that's difficult. I found that it's always there. I can always call it up, and it's always there. I can't, you know, with regards to this, the story, I'm like, sometimes in writing this particular story, I would let it write itself.
Right.
I would wait for Henry Finch, because by that point, we were on our fifth or sixth characterization of Henry.
Yeah.
It was almost like now Henry was actually telling me the story, because I could see his face. And
you
so
can
he
picture
was.
Picture him going through the different parts of the story.
So he was like telling me how to finish it.
And you also, you didn't have an outline, you didn't have
no,
any kind of skeleton
no,
framework.
No.
You just wrote it.
I just wrote it.
And then we edited it as we got through certain amounts.
Because I wrote more than what we needed. And that was, you know, and I don't know. Everybody has a different kind of a writing style. Mm-hmm. Like you have a different creative style with regards to how you draw.
It's like Stephen King, he's a good example of a writer who, when he sits down to write his books, he sits down and it's just like a flow. Like a steady flow, stream of consciousness. He doesn't, I don't think, that he, you know, writes a structure to his stories.
He just lets it come out.
Yeah.
Well, and that, you know.
And he can, you know, he wrote, you know, Cujo, he wrote, you know, all those great stories.
Yeah, Shawshank Redemption. I mean, that's where that.
The Green Mile.
For me, writing, I was funny. I used to get in trouble with my teachers in grade school because I wouldn't read books so much. I was at the top of my class in reading skill. I like to read periodicals, magazines, and newspapers. I mean, Time Magazine, Newsweek, Life, Look, and I loved watching movies and television, visual. But if I had a good book and I got into it, it was almost like I was too impatient to sit and make myself read the words.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted more of a fix from visuals and stuff. But I would read books,
so
and I loved books.
You wanted like a kind of like a package deal, almost.
No, it's like some people, you know, they were inward type people, and they could go take a big book like, say, Atonement, which is about 700 pages, a book like that, and just go and shut the world out and read. Me, I'm like that with movies. I can watch 5-10 movies a week. I mean, movies. And I like a good book, though. I do like a good book. I love it. And I like to read descriptive writing. I like writing. And I did wasn't really into writing that much at all when I was younger. And I worked in an improvisational
Right.
comedy group for years, and we had to write all of our own scripts. In fact, many of the people that I worked with in that improvisational group, Peter McNichol, big actor in LA, Doug Hutchison, another big actor in LA. He was that icky guy in The Green Mile that killed the little mouse. I just saw that. That character, the policeman. Peter Tolan, who's executive producer of Rescue Me, and he's Billy Crystal's writing partner on several films like Analyze This, Analyze That. Lots of comedians. I mean, a lot of people who are incredibly talented and great writers. And we had to write all these scripts. And, I mean, I could come up with the ideas, but the actual banging out of the writing at that time was not, it didn't interest me as much. I got really much more into the writing when I read the book, The Artist's Way.
All right, I think that's a perfect place for us to stop and for us to.
Did I monopolize? I'm sorry, I got
No,
on
you
it.
did great. But that's a great first episode. I think it's a good place to stop. And everybody, stay tuned.
And we'll come on, we're going to talk more about Franklin and about his
We'll finish this
process.
story about Karen's process when we come back.
And we'll talk about your process
And
and
we'll
your
talk about
art.
my process in the art.
And we'll
So
just keep talking
we'll be back.
because,